I'll be reading two scriptures tonight. The first one is Isaiah 26:3. Those of steadfast mind, you keep in peace because they trust in you. And then John 16:29-33. His disciples said, "Yes, now you are speaking plainly, not in any figure of speech. Now we know that you know all things and do not need to have anyone question you. By this we believe that you came from God." Jesus answered them, "Do you now believe? The hour is coming, indeed it has come, when you will be scattered, each one to his own, and you will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone because the Father is with me. I have said this to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you face persecution, but take courage, I have conquered the world." And God always blesses the public reading of his inspired and infallible word.
I want to talk to you about peace. What is it and how do we receive it? If ever there was a time we longed for peace, it is now. War still scars our news feeds. The Ukraine conflict continues to displace millions and deepen humanitarian need around the world. In the Middle East, the humanitarian situation across Gaza and the wider region remains severe, with aid access and basic services repeatedly disrupted. The US, Israel, and Iran war has spilled into wider conflict across the region and the world. In South Sudan, there is unsettled politics. In northern Nigeria, there are attacks on Christians. In northern India, many Christians feel unsafe and uncertain about their future. And closer to home, many families still feel financial pressure. UK inflation is off its peak, but the cost of living remains high for many households. Student loans, many are paying their loans back, but the interest rate is now so high that no matter how much they pay, the loan keeps increasing, and they don't know if there is a way out. Even the Bank of England expects inflation to rise again. Energy bills continue to be in flux, but we're carrying a quieter burden. We're living through the warmest decade on record, with 2025 ranking as the hottest of many years ever measured. That shapes our anxieties about the future that our children will inherit. And as AI reshapes work, some are hopeful and others are anxious, and many feel unprepared. It's no surprise then that mental health needs are up. Over 1 billion people worldwide live with mental illness such as anxiety and depression and are being medicated for it. That's 1 in 7. So what is peace in a world like that? How do we receive it? I want to try and answer the question by looking at two scriptures with you. Isaiah 25 that you heard, and also John 16 in two separate sections of that chapter. The one that you've heard read and another. In Isaiah 25, with a song that praises God for overthrowing the ruthless and sheltering the vulnerable, Isaiah looks forward and he sees a day when even strong people will honor God and the cities of ruthless nations will stand in awe. He will keep in perfect peace those whose hearts are set on him. It's a promise that God makes to those whose steadfast intention is laid on the eyes and on the character of God. It's an unqualified promise. I will keep in perfect peace those whose hearts are steadfastly set on me. And in John chapter 16, just before his arrest, before he goes to a garden to pray, as Abby read to us, Jesus is asked by his disciples, "What's happening? We believe you and we trust you. But he knows that great pain is coming. Jesus knows that a great trauma is about to face his disciples. And he doesn't pretend that it is not. He says to them, the world is going to get difficult. Your lives are going to get harder. But I have given you a peace that the world can't give. And when you feel uncertain, remember this, I have overcome the world. Neither text ignores pain. It doesn't pretend that it is not there. It points us to a peace which is deeper than the circumstances of our lives. Let me read you from just earlier in John's Gospel, in the same chapter, where Jesus is speaking to his disciples. Jesus knew in verse 19 that they wanted to ask him about what was happening. So he said to them, are you discussing among yourselves what I meant when I said, a little while and you will no longer see me, and again a little while and you will see me? Very truly I tell you, you will weep and you will mourn, but the world will rejoice. You will have pain, but your pain will turn into joy. When a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when her child is born, she no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy of having brought a human being into the world. So you have pain now, but I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from me. On that day, no one will take your joy from you. On that day, you will ask nothing of me. Very truly, I tell you, if you ask anything of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Do you hear what he's just said? You will ask nothing of me on that day. But we're not in that day yet, are we? And the reality is that one day...
I'll be reading two scriptures tonight. The first one is Isaiah 26:3. Those of steadfast mind, you keep in peace because they trust in you. And then John 16:29-33. His disciples said, yes, now you are speaking plainly, not in any figure of speech. Now we know that you know all things and do not need to have anyone question you. By this we believe that you came from God. Jesus answered them, do you now believe? The hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered, each one to his own, and you will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone because the Father is with me. I have said this to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you face persecution, but take courage. I have conquered the world. And God always blesses the public reading of his inspired and infallible word.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, Abby. If you're going to encourage her for reading, please encourage her. Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. My name is Malcolm. If you're here online for the first time, you're very welcome. And in the building, you're also very welcome. I have the privilege of leading Kensington Temple. And I'm very grateful to you that you've taken time to be here. And I pray that God will speak to you and that you will be aware of his grace. And if you are exploring faith, I pray that you will discover that Christ can be trusted tonight and that he is here to touch your life and to bless you. I want to talk to you about peace. What is it and how do we receive it? If ever there was a time we longed for peace, it is now. War still scars our news feeds. The Ukraine conflict continues to displace millions and deepen humanitarian need around the world. In the Middle East, the humanitarian situation across Gaza and the wider region remains severe, with aid access and basic services repeatedly disrupted. The US, Israel, and Iran war has spilled into wider conflict across the region and the world. In South Sudan, there is unsettled politics. In northern Nigeria, there are attacks on Christians. In northern India, many Christians feel unsafe and uncertain about their future. And closer to home, many families still feel financial pressure. UK inflation is off its peak, but the cost of living remains high for many households. Student loans, many are paying their loans back, but the interest rate is now so high that no matter how much they pay, the loan keeps increasing. And they don't know if there is a way out. Even the Bank of England expects inflation to rise again. Energy bills continue to be in flux, but we're carrying a quieter burden. We're living through the warmest decade on record, with 2025 ranking as the hottest of many years ever measured. That shapes our anxieties about the future that our children will inherit. And as AI reshapes work, some are hopeful and others are anxious, and many feel unprepared. It's no surprise then that mental health needs are up. Over 1 billion people worldwide live with mental illness such as anxiety and depression and are being medicated for it. That's 1 in 7. So what is peace in a world like that? How do we receive it? I want to try and answer the question by looking at two scriptures with you. Isaiah 25 that you heard, and also John 16 in two separate sections of that chapter. The one that you've heard read and another. In Isaiah 25, with a song that praises God for overthrowing the ruthless and sheltering the vulnerable, Isaiah looks forward and he sees a day when even strong people will honor God and the cities of ruthless nations will stand in awe. He will keep in perfect peace those whose hearts are set on him. It's a promise that God makes to those whose steadfast intention is laid on the eyes and on the character of God. It's an unqualified promise. I will keep in perfect peace those whose hearts are steadfastly set on me. And in John chapter 16, just before his arrest, before he goes to a garden to pray, as Abby read to us, Jesus is asked by his disciples, what's happening? We believe you and we trust you, but he knows that great pain is coming. Jesus knows that a great trauma is about to face his disciples. And he doesn't pretend that it is not. He says to them, the world is going to get difficult. Your lives are going to get harder. But I have given you a peace that the world can't give. And when you feel uncertain, remember this, I have overcome the world. Neither text ignores pain. It doesn't pretend that it is not there. It points us to a peace which is deeper than the circumstances of our lives. Let me read you from just earlier in John's Gospel, in the same chapter, where Jesus is speaking to his disciples. Jesus knew in verse 19 that they wanted to ask him about what was happening. So he said to them, are you discussing among yourselves what I meant when I said, a little while and you will no longer see me, and again a little while and you will see me? Very truly I tell you, you will weep and you will mourn, but the world will rejoice. You will have pain, but your pain will turn into joy. When a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when her child is born, she no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy of having brought a human being into the world. So you have pain now, but I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from me. On that day, no one will take your joy from you. On that day, you will ask nothing of me. Very truly, I tell you, if you ask anything of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Do you hear what he's just said? You will ask nothing of me on that day. In other words, oh, I have to stop. I have to pause. Welcome back, Iman.
So good to see you.
Now, those of you that are not part of our church wonder what's going on. This wonderful sister has been in Beirut. She was there visiting her family, and she was there right in the middle of the breakout of the war, and she got stranded. She was unable to get back, and we have prayed and we have sought the Lord and we've cried out to her, to him, and she is home. Where was I? What? Somebody was helping me. Help me. I've genuinely lost my spot. Where was I? Oh, thank you. Yes, I know where I was. I knew that. I was just testing you, Claudette, to make sure you were listening. So in John 16:19-23, Jesus says something very interesting. There's a little phrase there that you may not have noticed. He says, on that day, you will have no questions of me. On that day, you will ask nothing of me. But we're not in that day yet, are we? And the reality is that one day God will answer every question that you have. But maybe not today. That's exactly what he says to his disciples. One day you will have no questions of me. And many of us in the midst of our trauma and our uncertainty and our fear and our pain, when we watch the news, when we think about what's happening, when we think about all of the things that I've just mentioned, AI and everything else, we can say, God, what's happening? What's going on? My life is not making sense. I don't know a way out. I feel trapped. I feel uncertain. I feel afraid. I feel anxious. I am worried. And that's normal. But God promises through his son, Jesus, one day you won't have any questions of me. How we get to that point from this point is about trusting him. It's about remembering that he is faithful and he is true. That's why at the end of chapter 16, he says, my peace I give you. Not as the world gives, give I to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and neither let them be afraid. The peace that I have given you is different. In the world, you will have trouble. But I have overcome the world. Jesus promises his disciples in the midst of their grief that their grief will turn to joy, like labor pains giving way to celebration of a new child. He promises an access to the Father that will fill them with a joy that no one can take away. Isaiah 25 and John 16, do not ignore pain. They name it. And then they point us to a deeper peace than our circumstances. A peace that remains no matter what we are going through. What is peace? It's more than the absence of trouble. It is the presence of God's just and merciful reign. Isaiah 25 sits in a section where God is dismantling oppressive systems. He is defending the poor and he is preparing a feast for all people. Peace, or shalom, is wholeness. It is right relationship with God, with one another, and with the created world. It is multidirectional. It is up, it is out, and it is in. It's a peace that is pervasive, impacting everything of our, every part of our lives. It is not escapism. Too much Pentecostalism is escapism. It's running away from the world. We don't need to run away from the world. God has run into the world in his Son. And he asks us to remember that there is nothing that we can face if we are Christians that we face alone. The peace of God is the triumph of God's justice and the triumph of God's mercy breaking into real time to keep you and I safe and to give us hope. When Isaiah says strong people will glorify you, he imagines a reordered world where power bows to God, God does not bow to power, and where the ruthless are disarmed. Peace is not the silence that is imposed by the strong. In Isaiah 25, peace, and I thought long and hard about this line, peace is the song of the ruined that rises from the scattered ashes of our lives. That we can stand in the middle of devastation and say, I have a peace that makes no sense. Some years ago, I went through a lot of difficulties and challenges in a short period of time in my life. And I was reading back over my journal. I've kept a journal for 40 years. In preparation for tonight's message, I was reading back over my journal. And one of my journal entries ended up being a blog post on a blog that I have had for many years. And I talked about the nuclear wasteland of devastation and loss. And standing in the midst of it, knowing a peace that made no sense. And looking around, and all I could see was heartbreak and pain. For a period of time, I went through a season where I felt like suffering and death had attached itself to me, and I smelt of it. But even in the midst of that terribly hard time, God gave me a peace that made no sense. A stillness at the very center of my life that could not be disrupted. And I believe that I have lived in that peace now for nearly 20 years. And God has never allowed it to be disrupted. He has held it in the center of my life. And I think that many of you tonight need that. That sense of peace that will rise from the ruins of your life, that circumstances will not be able to take away, that disappointment will not be able to remove. I'm not special. God is the one that gives such peace. And I sense his peace now, a stillness in the room and online, because I think this is a word for some of you. Peace is not just the absence of trouble. It is the presence of God. And it is not based on circumstances. It is based on Christ. In John 16, Jesus doesn't promise them an easy path. He promises them himself instead. Their sorrow will be real, like labor pains. They are real, but it will be transformed by resurrection joy. Christian peace is not naive optimism. Christian peace is a person, the crucified and risen Lord Jesus Christ, standing not only with us, but standing within us. This peace is a gift, but it is also a governance. Do you hear the words of Jesus? Your sorrow will turn into joy. But it's also a peace that can reign in us, that can rule in us, that can shape our reactions and our habits and our hopes and diminish our fears. God's peace is received, and then it is exercised as an authority over fear, over desire, over decisions, and over dilemmas that we might face. And we all need it. Why then do we lack it? Why do so many Christians, let alone people who are not yet followers of Jesus, lack peace? For a number of reasons. But here is one of the most important. If you are a follower of Jesus and you have faced suffering and sorrow and loss and uncertainty and death, and you have felt disrupted by them, let me tell you, that's because you were not created for death. You were created for life. So when death interrupts life, it shakes us. We were not made for death. We were not designed for death. Death entered later. Destruction entered later into the human condition. Sorrow, heartbreak, and pain were not part of the original design of God for your life and mine. They came because of foolishness and pride and selfishness. And the reason you feel a dissonance with them is because you're supposed to feel a dissonance with them. They are supposed to make you feel, this is not what I was made for. You were made for life. You weren't made for death. And the world is disordered by death and by sin. That's why we lack peace at times. War, exploitation, and injustice fracture the shalom of God unless you know how to exercise that shalom. We feel it in the headlines from conflict zones where civilians suffer and displacement surges. We feel it in our own families when heartbreak knocks on our door. We also lack peace because our lives get overloaded and underrooted. Let me explain. Economic pressure, shifting work patterns, climate anxieties, tech changes, they all produce this low-grade of uncertainty that rarely switches off. I recently had to get a new phone because my old phone got driven over by a truck. It's a long story. But when I was in getting my new phone, I had been saving up for a set of new headphones. They're called AirPod Max headphones. They're massive. They make me look like a panda bear. But I have very small ear canals, too much information. So I like something to go over my ears. And I took them with me on a recent trip last week that I just made. And there's this amazing button on the right-hand side of them. And you press it, and all the background noise goes away. It's amazing. It's called noise suppression or something. And you can press it and still hear everybody talking if you want, and your music, but who would want that? But you can press it, and it makes everything go away. It's amazing. I got on the plane to fly to Houston, a 10-hour flight, and I thought, I'm going to try these. And I pressed it, and I'm sure you're used to flying. That droning of the engine that really gets on your nerves after a while, or the man next to you that's snoring like a pig, and you want to just whack him to wake him up. Maybe you don't. I pressed this little button and I couldn't hear a thing. I was like, I love these headphones. Why did I not get them before? Some of us wish we had a button to drown out the low-grade hum of anxiety in our lives. How am I going to pay the bills? What's going to happen to my family? What will we do if this happens? What will we do if that happens? And it's not that any of them are unmanageable, but they build up to this din. Do you know what I mean? A din in our heads because we are overloaded. No wonder we then see anxiety and uncertainty creeping up. But we're not only overloaded, we're underrooted. We've got our lives planted in the wrong thing. So when everything shakes, we shake with it. But what if there's a way of being planted in something that doesn't shake? Or someone who doesn't shake, that will hold you above everything else? Not only is it true that we lack peace because of the disordering of sin and death, and being overloaded and underrooted. We also often lack peace because we look for it in the wrong direction. We try distraction. We try control. We try performance. We try possessions. And they all soothe you for a moment. But they can't still your soul. That's where addiction ends up coming from. Because you try something, you feel better. You try it again, and it doesn't work. So you take a little bit more. And then you feel it. And then you try it again. But you need a little bit more than the second time. And then a little bit more the fourth time. And then a little bit more the fifth time. And it doesn't matter whether your distraction or what you're taking is sex or drink or drugs or money or power or position. It can't satisfy this shifting soul and uncertainty. And one day you wake up and you realize, I've taken so much of this that it has now taken me. And I have nothing less. I have nothing else that I can give it. An idol is something that promises you everything, but actually ends up taking everything from you. It promises you joy, but it takes your joy. It promises you hope, but it takes your hope. It promises you your life, but it ends up taking your life. Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they rest in you. So where then do we find peace? At the cross, where justice and mercy meet. Isaiah's vision of ruthless powers toppled and the vulnerable sheltered reaches its apex at Calvary. When Jesus dies, the ruthless powers are toppled. It is finished. And the vulnerable are sheltered. Forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. The vision of Isaiah 25:3 is fulfilled as Jesus dies on the cross, and every power is disenthroned, and every lost and frightened person is offered shelter and offered hope. As God's judgment is poured out on sin, his mercy is extended to sinners. As he deals with the problem, he reaches his hand out to those of us who know we need a savior. In the cross of Jesus and in his resurrection, God does not sidestep evil. He defeats it and then he rises again. He doesn't sidestep death. On the cross, he dies. And in the tomb, he is resurrected, defeating death forever. In fact, one of the writers of one of the letters of the New Testament put it this way in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. He defeated death by dying. He defeated the power that tries to control us. The ultimate opponent, Paul describes it as in 1 Corinthians 15. When our ultimate opponent, death, is defeated, he says, in 1 Corinthians 15, 26. Jesus has swallowed up defeat in the cross. He has swallowed up death in the cross. He has swallowed up fear in the cross. He has swallowed up shame in the cross. We find our peace at the cross, but we also find it at the empty tomb. The risen Christ turns sorrow to joy. John 16 is fulfilled on resurrection morning. The disciples' fear gives way to boldness for one reason and one reason alone. Jesus is alive again. He is alive again. The Lord breathes his spirit on us and he makes our hearts his home. And we find peace in his kingdom. A kingdom that is already here but is not yet complete. Isaiah's song looks forward to God's feast for all people on planet Earth. And we live between the promise and the fulfillment. I am already forgiven. I am already adopted. I am already indwelt by the Holy Spirit. But I still cry. I still deal with sorrow and sadness and disappointment. I still can't figure it all out. I still find myself bewildered. But one day I will sit at a table where every tear will be wiped away. And the tension between then and now explains both your heartache and your heart hope. If you will learn to let Jesus hold your heart, he will deal with the ache and he will give you hope. He will keep in steadfast love those, or in steadfast peace, those whose hearts are set on him. How do I receive this peace? Well, let me offer you a couple of ideas. Number one, look up and rehearse in your mind who God is. Listen to how Isaiah 25 begins. O Lord, you are my God. I will exalt you. You have done wonderful things, plans formed of old, faithful and sure. So when our world feels shaky, looking up or worshiping God anchors us in God's unshakable character. His faithfulness, his sovereignty, and his goodness. Start your day this week by naming one characteristic of God and thanking him for it. In a moment, I'm going to invite you to worship him and look up. Secondly, come clean. Bring your sorrow and your disappointment to Jesus. In John 16, Jesus does not scold the disciples for their confusion. He doesn't tell them they're stupid. He doesn't tell them they have to get with the plan. He explains that he is with them. He promises that he knows what he's doing, and he gives them peace. Write this down in your notes. Peace begins where pretense ends. If you are pretending about something right now, you will never have peace. And I've seen Christians who pretend to have peace, particularly in our strain of the church. How are you? I'm trusting the Lord. When inside they are churned up. How are you feeling? I'm holding on to the promise of God. When inside they are looking for something to hold on to. You don't need to pretend in the presence of God. You don't need to come and say, everything's fine. I have this theory that if many modern Christians were, when you read the Psalms, they're full of questions. Where are you, God? Why have you not helped? I feel abandoned. I'm uncertain. I'm fearful. Many Christians, if they were writing the Psalms today, would say, Lord, thank you that everything is great. Thank you that I have no questions. Because we have conditioned each other not to be honest. Pretense needs to go for peace to be experienced. I didn't say to be received. You have received peace when you have received Jesus. You can't experience the peace until you let go of the pretense. You've got to let go of the pretense. Come clean. Bring your fear to him. Bring your question to him. Tell him exactly where you are hurt. Tell him what you are worried about. Tell him the instability that you feel. Tell him about your bills, about your work, about your worry, about your anxiety, about the stuff that is creating that hum. Just tell him. Let it tumble out before him, and he will listen, and he will not scold you. At one point, a few years ago, I said to the Lord, I need your peace. And he said, well, will you stop wriggling? Do you know what I mean? I'm the father of five. Four of them we've had all our life. One came into our life when he was 16. But the four that we've had all our lives, when I tried to soothe them when they were little, they'd wriggle. when they got into trouble and they needed to be reminded that everything was going to be all right. Sometimes they'd be battering at my legs, or they'd be shouting and screaming, and you're trying to help, and you're like, you'll be all right. You'll be like, no, I won't. And you had to, did I ever tell you the story about my son and tomato ketchup? Wonder, do any of you remember the story of my son and tomato ketchup? Some of you do. Most of you don't. This is a great story. So my oldest son is called Matthew, and when he was two, he hates tomato ketchup now, by the way, and I think I know why. When he was two or three, we were in a shopping center, and he wanted tomato ketchup, but we had tomato ketchup at home. So I said, Matthew, you don't need it. I want it. I said, you can't have it. I want it. I said, we don't need ketchup, son. So he lay down on the supermarket floor, and he threw his one and only tantrum. I want it, 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 I want it. So I lay down beside him, and I threw a tantrum. Everybody watching me in the tomato ketchup aisle in Sainsbury's, I'll never forget it. Safeway, I'll never forget it. You're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it. And he looked at me, and he said, okay. I think that's why he hates ketchup now. Sometimes we have to just let people work it out. God lets us beat his chest. And sometimes we can't receive his peace because we're too busy beating his chest. And sometimes he'll say, are you done now? And sometimes, unfortunately, that means that we have to run out of energy. And when we've run out of energy, when we've brought our real sorrow to him, he says, now I'm able to comfort you. I've always been able to comfort you, but you haven't always been able to receive it. Because your mind has been captured and cultivating all these fears and horrors and sorrows. Bring your sorrow to Jesus. And thirdly, pray in his name. Jesus says in John 16, in that day you will ask in my name. To pray in Jesus' name is not a formula. It is a relationship. Because of his cross and his resurrection, we have confident access to the Father. Bring your needs to him today. Daily bread, wisdom for decisions, courage for witness, strength and weakness. Keep it simple, keep it honest, and keep it expectant, but pray in his name. On my way back from the US on Friday night into last night, I had some papers that I had to write and some bits and pieces that I wanted to do with my messages for today. So I was working quite well on them all, and my computer crashed. And because there was no way of backing anything up, it took everything with it. So I got home, and Debbie said to me, how are you doing? I said, great, I just need to rewrite my 5 messages for tomorrow. And she said, you're going to be up all night? I said, no, I won't be. I've done all the work. I've written them once. Maybe when I write them again, they'll be better. So I went into my study and I got on my knees and I said, Jesus, I am really frustrated and I need you to give me some peace. And I need you to help me to get through all of these things because I don't want to be unprepared for tomorrow. And guess what? He gave me the peace. Tell him what you need. Be honest with him. Look up. Come clean. Pray in his name. Now here's one that you may not expect. Stand with those who feel as if their peace is not present. Isaiah celebrates a God who is a refuge to the poor and a shelter for the storm. To receive God's peace is to agree to extend it. It doesn't stop with you. You are not a bucket, you are a drain pipe. Who in your street or in your workplace needs to know the peace of God? Take your eyes off your own problem and start to help someone else and watch what changes. Maybe it's a bag of shopping. Maybe it's a cup of coffee. Maybe it's an invitation to your table. Maybe it's help with a job search or simply listening. As you embody God's compassion to other people, his peace rises in you. Something changes when you take yourself out of the center of the circle. And lastly, live backwards. I'm waiting on you all looking at me to say, what are you talking about? Jesus likens sorrow to labor pains, doesn't he? Which are painful but purposeful. The new world that Jesus promises is crowning. Christians are future people. Write this down. We borrow tomorrow's joy to pay today's bills of courage. God's promise for tomorrow, look at me for a moment. God's promise for tomorrow has strength for today. It can reach back into your circumstances today and it can lift your head. Let me let you into a little secret. Come here. I know the end of the story. God wins. Not sometimes, all the time. So live backwards. If he's winning, live today as if he's winning. If he has promised that he's not going to leave you, live as if he means it. Read the end of the story and live like it's true, because it is. Let me give a word to the anxious, to the exhausted, to the searching. Some of us are carrying a private storm, sleep that won't come, a bank balance that keeps you awake, a social media feed full of conflict, worries about your kids, your work shifts that you can't control. And if you're battling anxiety or depression, please, please, please hear me carefully. You're not on your own. And seeking help is wise and brave. Never be ashamed about going to the doctor. Never be afraid to talk to a counselor. Never be embarrassed about getting some therapy. But I want you to know all of this too. Jesus sees you. The peace he offers is not a pat on the head. It is his presence, crucified love, risen power, and the Spirit's companionship. He never promised me a life without storms. He promised me that he would be with me in the boat. So, as the musicians return, in a moment I'm going to ask you to pray with me. But I want to give you some helpful tips to practice this week. One for the morning, one for the afternoon, and one for the evening. In the morning, I suggest that you do something called the morning lift. Well, I've called it the morning lift. When you get out of bed with your cup of tea or your blended smoothie, bleh, oh, or a glass of water, sit still and open your hands and say, Father, I receive your peace. And name your top fear aloud to him. Today I am worried about. And say, Jesus, govern my heart today. Father, I receive your peace. Today I am worried about whatever it might be. Jesus, will you govern my heart today? Secondly, news, I call this news with knees. When you see a war story, when you see a war story, whisper, Prince of Peace, bring mercy. When you see a climate change headline, say, Lord, help us to steward your creation. And when you worry about monies or finance, say, Lord, I'm trusting you for what I am facing. When you read about AI and work, ask for courage. Kneel with the news. And lastly at night, and some of you will be unused to this, I do this quite often, light a candle and remember the presence of Jesus. Look at it for a minute or two, and as it flickers, it looks very vulnerable. And just say to Jesus, I feel like that sometimes, Lord. And be reminded that a flickering flame he will not extinguish, and a bruised reed he will not break. Maybe read Isaiah 25:3. Look at the candle and say, you will keep in perfect peace whose hearts are set on you. Or, you have given me a peace that the world cannot take away. I'm not suggesting you worship the candle, just light it. Just allow yourself to sit in the peace of God. God will answer every question that you have, but maybe not today. That's exactly what he says to his disciples. One day, you will have no questions of me. And many of us, in the midst of our trauma and our uncertainty and our fear and our pain, when we watch the news, when we think about what's happening, when we think about all of the things that I've just mentioned, AI and everything else, we can say, God, what's happening? What's going on? My life is not making sense. I don't know a way out. I feel trapped. I feel uncertain. I feel afraid. I feel anxious. I am worried. And that's normal. But God promises through his son Jesus, one day you won't have any questions of me. How we get to that point from this point is about trusting him. It's about remembering that he is faithful and he is true. That's why at the end of chapter 16, he says, my peace I give you. Not as the world gives, give I to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and neither let them be afraid. The peace that I have given you is different. In the world, you will have trouble, but I have overcome the world. Jesus promises his disciples, in the midst of their grief, that their grief will turn to joy, like labor pains giving way to celebration of a new child. He promises an access to the Father that will fill them with a joy that no one can take away. Isaiah 25 and John 16 do not ignore pain. They name it. And then they point us to a deeper peace than our circumstances. A peace that remains no matter what we are going through. What is peace? It's more than the absence of trouble. It is the presence of God's just and merciful reign. Isaiah 25 sits in a section where God is dismantling oppressive systems. He is defending the poor, and he is preparing a feast for all people. Peace, or shalom, is wholeness. It is right relationship with God, with one another, and with the created world. It is multidirectional. It is up, it is out, and it is in. It's a peace that is pervasive, impacting everything of every part of our lives. It is not escapism. Too much Pentecostalism is escapism. It's running away from the world. We don't need to run away from the world. God has run into the world in his son. And he asks us to remember that there is nothing that we can face, if we are Christians, that we face alone. The peace of God is the triumph of God's justice and the triumph of God's mercy breaking into real time to keep you and I safe and to give us hope. When Isaiah says strong people will glorify you, he imagines a reordered world where power bows to God, God does not bow to power. And where the ruthless are disarmed. Peace is not the silence that is imposed by the strong. In Isaiah 25, peace, and I thought long and hard about this line, peace is the song of the ruined that rises from the scattered ashes of our lives. That we can stand in the middle of devastation and say, I have a peace that makes no sense. Some years ago, I went through a lot of difficulties and challenges in a short period of time in my life. And I was reading back over my journal. I've kept a journal for 40 years. In preparation for tonight's message, I was reading back over my journal. And one of my journal entries ended up being a blog post on a blog that I have had for many years. And I talked about the nuclear wasteland of devastation and loss. And standing in the midst of it, knowing a peace that made no sense. And looking around, and all I could see was heartbreak and pain. For a period of time, I went through a season where I felt like suffering and death had attached itself to me, and I smelt of it. But even in the midst of that terribly hard time, God gave me a peace that made no sense. A stillness at the very center of my life that could not be disrupted. And I believe that I have lived in that peace now for nearly 20 years. And God has never allowed it to be disrupted. He has held it in the center of my life. And I think that many of you tonight need that. That sense of peace that will rise from the ruins of your life. That circumstances will not be able to take away. That disappointment will not be able to remove. I'm not special. God is the one that gives such peace. And I sense his peace now. A stillness in the room and online. Because I think this is a word for some of you. Peace is not just the absence of trouble. It is the presence of God. And it is not based on circumstances. It is based on Christ. In John 16, Jesus doesn't promise them an easy path. He promises them himself instead. Their sorrow will be real, like labor pains. They are real, but it will be transformed by resurrection joy. Christian peace is not naive optimism. Christian peace is a person, the crucified and risen Lord Jesus Christ, standing not only with us, but standing within us. This peace is a gift, but it is also a governance. Do you hear the words of Jesus? Your sorrow will turn into joy. But it's also a peace that can reign in us, that can rule in us, that can shape our reactions and our habits and our hopes and diminish our fears. God's peace is received and then it is exercised as an authority over fear, over desire, over decisions, and over dilemmas that we might face. And we all need it. Why then do we lack it? Why do so many Christians, let alone people who are not yet followers of Jesus, lack peace? For a number of reasons. But here is one of the most important. If you are a follower of Jesus and you have faced suffering and sorrow and loss and uncertainty and death and you have felt disrupted by them, let me tell you, that's because you were not created for death. You were created for life. So when death interrupts life, it shakes us. We were not made for death. We were not designed for death. Death entered later. Destruction entered later into the human condition. Sorrow, heartbreak, and pain were not part of the original design of God for your life and mine. They came because of foolishness and pride and selfishness. And the reason you feel a dissonance with them is because you're supposed to feel a dissonance with them. They are supposed to make you feel, this is not what I was made for. You were made for life. You weren't made for death. And the world is disordered by death and by sin. That's why we lack peace at times. War, exploitation, and injustice fracture the shalom of God unless you know how to exercise that shalom. We feel it in the headlines from conflict zones where civilians suffer and displacement surges. We feel it in our own families when heartbreak knocks on our door. We also lack peace because our lives get overloaded and underrooted. Let me explain. Economic pressure, shifting work patterns, climate anxieties, tech changes, they all produce this low-grade of uncertainty that rarely switches off. I recently had to get a new phone because my old phone got driven over by a truck. It's a long story. But when I was in getting my new phone, I had been saving up for a set of new headphones. They're called AirPod Max headphones. They're massive. They make me look like a panda bear. But I have very small ear canals, too much information. So I like something to go over my ears. And I took them with me on a recent trip last week that I just made. And there's this amazing button on the right-hand side of them. And you press it, and all the background noise goes away. It's amazing. It's called noise suppression or something. And you can press it and still hear everybody talking if you want, and your music, but who would want that? But you can press it, and it makes everything go away. It's amazing. I got on the plane to fly to Houston, a 10-hour flight, and I thought, I'm going to try these. And I pressed it, and I'm sure you're used to flying. That droning of the engine that really gets on your nerves after a while, or the man next to you that's snoring like a pig, and you want to just whack him to wake him up. Maybe you don't. I pressed this little button, and I couldn't hear a thing. I was like, I love these headphones. Why did I not get them before? Some of us wish we had a button to drown out the low-grade hum of anxiety in our lives. How am I going to pay the bills? What's going to happen to my family? What will we do if this happens? What will we do if that happens? And it's not that any of them are unmanageable, but they build up to this din. Do you know what I mean? A din in our heads because we are overloaded. No wonder we then see anxiety and uncertainty creeping up. But we're not only overloaded, we're underrooted. We've got our lives planted in the wrong thing. So when everything shakes, we shake with it. But what if there's a way of being planted in something that doesn't shake? Or someone who doesn't shake, that will hold you above everything else? Not only is it true that we lack peace because of the disordering of sin and death and being overloaded and underrooted, we also often lack peace because we look for it in the wrong direction. We try distraction. We try control. We try performance. We try possessions. And they all soothe you for a moment. But they can't still your soul. That's where addiction ends up coming from. Because you try something, you feel better. You try it again, and it doesn't work. So you take a little bit more. And then you feel it. And then you try it again. But you need a little bit more than the second time. And then a little bit more the fourth time. And then a little bit more the fifth time. And it doesn't matter whether your distraction or what you're taking is sex or drink or drugs or money or power or position. It can't satisfy this shifting soul and uncertainty. And one day you wake up and you realize, I've taken so much of this that it has now taken me. And I have nothing less. I have nothing else that I can give it. An idol is something that promises you everything, but actually ends up taking everything from you. It promises you joy, but it takes your joy. It promises you hope, but it takes your hope. It promises you your life, but it ends up taking your life. Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they rest in you. So where then do we find peace? At the cross, where justice and mercy meet. Isaiah's vision of ruthless powers toppled and the vulnerable sheltered reaches its apex at Calvary. When Jesus dies, the ruthless powers are toppled. It is finished. And the vulnerable are sheltered. Forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. The vision of Isaiah 25:3 is fulfilled as Jesus dies on the cross, and every power is disenthroned, and every lost and frightened person is offered shelter and offered hope. As God's judgment is poured out on sin, his mercy is extended to sinners. As he deals with the problem, he reaches his hand out to those of us who know we need a savior. In the cross of Jesus and in his resurrection, God does not sidestep evil. He defeats it and then he rises again. He doesn't sidestep death. On the cross, he dies. And in the tomb, he is resurrected, defeating death forever. In fact, one of the writers of one of the letters of the New Testament put it this way in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. He defeated death by dying. He defeated the power that tries to control us. The ultimate opponent, Paul describes it as in 1 Corinthians 15. When our ultimate opponent, death, is defeated, he says in 1 Corinthians 15, 26. Jesus has swallowed up defeat in the cross. He has swallowed up death in the cross. He has swallowed up fear in the cross. He has swallowed up shame in the cross. We find our peace at the cross, but we also find it at the empty tomb. The risen Christ turns sorrow to joy. John 16 is fulfilled on resurrection morning. The disciples' fear gives way to boldness for one reason and one reason alone. Jesus is alive again. He is alive again. The Lord breathes his spirit on us and he makes our hearts his home. And we find peace in his kingdom. A kingdom that is already here, but is not yet complete. Isaiah's song looks forward to God's feast for all people on planet Earth. And we live between the promise and the fulfillment. I am already forgiven. I am already adopted. I am already indwelt by the Holy Spirit. But I still cry. I still deal with sorrow and sadness and disappointment. I still can't figure it all out. I still find myself bewildered. But one day I will sit at a table where every tear will be wiped away. And the tension between then and now explains both your heartache and your heart hope. If you will learn to let Jesus hold your heart, he will deal with the ache and he will give you hope. He will keep in steadfast love those, or in steadfast peace, those whose hearts are set on him. How do I receive this peace? Well, let me offer you a couple of ideas. Number one, look up and rehearse in your mind who God is. Listen to how Isaiah 25 begins. O Lord, you are my God, I will exalt you. You have done wonderful things, plans formed of old, faithful and sure. So when our world feels shaky, looking up or worshiping God anchors us in God's unshakable character. His faithfulness, his sovereignty, and his goodness. Start your day this week by naming one characteristic of God and thanking him for it. In a moment, I'm going to invite you to worship him and look up. Secondly, come clean. Bring your sorrow and your disappointment to Jesus. In John 16, Jesus does not scold the disciples for their confusion. He doesn't tell them they're stupid. He doesn't tell them they have to get with the plan. He explains that he is with them. He promises that he knows what he's doing, and he gives them peace. Write this down in your notes. Peace begins where pretense ends. If you are pretending about something right now, you will never have peace. And I've seen Christians who pretend to have peace, particularly in our strain of the church. How are you? I'm trusting the Lord. When inside they are churned up. How are you feeling? I'm holding on to the promise of God. When inside they are looking for something to hold on to. You don't need to pretend in the presence of God. You don't need to come and say, everything's fine. I have this theory that if many modern Christians were, when you read the Psalms, they're full of questions. Where are you, God? Why have you not helped? I feel abandoned. I'm uncertain. I'm fearful. Many Christians, if they were writing the Psalms today, would say, Lord, thank you that everything is great. Thank you that I have no questions. Because we have conditioned each other not to be honest. Pretense needs to go for peace to be experienced. I didn't say to be received. You have received peace when you have received Jesus. You can't experience the peace until you let go of the pretense. You've got to let go of the pretense. Come clean. Bring your fear to him. Bring your question to him. Tell him exactly where you are hurt. Tell him what you are worried about. Tell him the instability that you feel. Tell him about your bills, about your work, about your worry, about your anxiety, about the stuff that is creating that hum. Just tell him. Let it tumble out before him. And he will listen and he will not scold you. At one point, a few years ago, I said to the Lord, I need your peace. And he said, well, will you stop wriggling? Do you know what I mean? I'm the father of five. Four of them we've had all our life. One came into our life when he was 16. But the four that we've had all our lives, when I tried to soothe them when they were little, they'd wriggle. When they got into trouble and they needed to be reminded that everything was going to be all right, sometimes they'd be battering at my legs. Or they'd be shouting and screaming and you're trying to help and you're like, you'll be all right. You'll be like, no, I won't. And you had to, did I ever tell you the story about my son and tomato ketchup? Do any of you remember the story of my son and tomato ketchup? Some of you do. Most of you don't. This is a great story. So my oldest son is called Matthew. And when he was two, he hates tomato ketchup now, by the way, and I think I know why. When he was two or three, we were in a shopping center and he wanted tomato ketchup. But we had tomato ketchup at home. So I said, Matthew, you don't need it. I want it. I said, you can't have it. I want it. I said, we don't need ketchup, son. So he lay down on the supermarket floor and he threw his one and only tantrum. I want it, 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 I want it. So I lay down beside him and I threw a tantrum. Everybody watching me in the tomato ketchup aisle in Sainsbury's, I'll never forget it. Safeway, I'll never forget it. You're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it, you're not having it. And he looked at me and he said, okay. I think that's why he hates ketchup now. Sometimes we have to just let people work it out. God lets us beat his chest. And sometimes we can't receive his peace because we're too busy beating his chest. And sometimes he'll say, are you done now? And sometimes, unfortunately, that means that we have to run out of energy. And when we've run out of energy, when we've brought our real sorrow to him, he says, now I'm able to comfort you. I've always been able to comfort you, but you haven't always been able to receive it because your mind has been captured and cultivating all these fears and horrors and sorrows. Bring your sorrow to Jesus. And thirdly, pray in his name. Jesus says in John 16, in that day you will ask in my name. To pray in Jesus' name is not a formula. It is a relationship. Because of his cross and his resurrection, we have confident access to the Father. Bring your needs to him today. Daily bread, wisdom for decisions, courage for witness, strength and weakness. Keep it simple, keep it honest, and keep it expectant, but pray in his name. On my way back from the US on Friday night into last night, I had some papers that I had to write and some bits and pieces that I wanted to do with my messages for today. So I was working quite well on them all, and my computer crashed. And because there was no way of backing anything up, it took everything with it. So I got home, and Debbie said to me, how are you doing? I said, great, I just need to rewrite my 5 messages for tomorrow. And she said, you're going to be up all night? I said, no, I won't be. I've done all the work. I've written them once. Maybe when I write them again, they'll be better. So I went into my study and I got on my knees and I said, Jesus, I am really frustrated and I need you to give me some peace. And I need you to help me to get through all of these things because I don't want to be unprepared for tomorrow. And guess what? He gave me the peace. Tell him what you need. Be honest with him. Look up. Come clean. Pray in his name. Now here's one that you may not expect. Stand with those who feel as if their peace is not present. Isaiah celebrates a God who is a refuge to the poor and a shelter for the storm. To receive God's peace is to agree to extend it. It doesn't stop with you. You are not a bucket, you are a drain pipe. Who in your street or in your workplace needs to know the peace of God? Take your eyes off your own problem and start to help someone else. And watch what changes. Maybe it's a bag of shopping. Maybe it's a cup of coffee. Maybe it's an invitation to your table. Maybe it's help with a job search or simply listening. As you embody God's compassion to other people, his peace rises in you. Something changes when you take yourself out of the center of the circle. And lastly, live backwards. I'm waiting on you all looking at me to say, what are you talking about? Jesus likens sorrow to labor pains, doesn't he? Which are painful but purposeful. The new world that Jesus promises is crowning. Christians are future people. Write this down. We borrow tomorrow's joy to pay today's bills of courage. God's promise for tomorrow, look at me for a moment. God's promise for tomorrow has strength for today. It can reach back into your circumstances today and it can lift your head. Let me let you into a little secret. Come here. I know the end of the story. God wins. Not sometimes, all the time. So live backwards. If he's winning, live today as if he's winning. If he has promised that he's not going to leave you, live as if he means it. Read the end of the story and live like it's true. Because it is. Let me give a word to the anxious, to the exhausted, to the searching. Some of us are carrying a private storm. Sleep that won't come. A bank balance that keeps you awake. A social media feed full of conflict. Worries about your kids, your work shifts that you can't control. And if you're battling anxiety or depression, please, please, please hear me carefully. You're not on your own. And seeking help is wise and brave. Never be ashamed about going to the doctor. Never be afraid to talk to a counselor. Never be embarrassed about getting some therapy. But I want you to know all of this too. Jesus sees you. The peace he offers is not a pat on the head. It is his presence. Crucified love, risen power, and the Spirit's companionship. He never promised me a life without storms. He promised me that he would be with me in the boat. So, as the musicians return, in a moment I'm going to ask you to pray with me. But I want to give you some helpful tips to practice this week. One for the morning, one for the afternoon, and one for the evening. In the morning, I suggest that you do something called the morning lift. Well, I've called it the morning lift. When you get out of bed with your cup of tea or your blended smoothie, bleh, ugh. Or a glass of water, sit still and open your hands and say, Father, I receive your peace. And name your top fear aloud to him. Today I am worried about. And say, Jesus, govern my heart today. Father, I receive your peace. Today, I am worried about whatever it might be. Jesus, will you govern my heart today? Secondly, news, I call this news with knees. When you see a war story, when you see a war story, whisper, Prince of Peace, bring mercy. When you see a climate change headline, say, Lord, help us to steward your creation. And when you worry about monies or finance, say, Lord, I'm trusting you for what I am facing. When you read about AI and work, ask for courage. Kneel with the news. And lastly at night, and some of you will be unused to this, I do this quite often, light a candle. And remember the presence of Jesus. look at it for a minute or two. And as it flickers, it looks very vulnerable. And just say to Jesus, I feel like that sometimes, Lord. And be reminded that a flickering flame he will not extinguish. And a bruised reed he will not break. Maybe read Isaiah 25:3. Look at the candle and say, you will keep in perfect peace whose hearts are set on you. Or, you have given me a peace that the world cannot take away. I'm not suggesting you worship the candle, just light it. Just allow yourself to sit in the peace of God.